Welcome to the Vanderbilt University Center for Teaching podcast, part of the center's efforts to cultivate dialogue about university teaching and learning among faculty, students, and staff. I'm your host, Derek Bruff, an assistant director here at the Center for Teaching. This episode is the last episode in our first batch of podcast episodes. As I mentioned in our last episode, we'll take a little time off soon to focus our energy on the start of the semester. We'll be back with new episodes in the fall, however. In the meantime, we're interested in receiving some feedback on the podcast from our listeners. Please visit our blog, located at blogs.vanderbilt.edu/CFTpodcast, where you'll find a link to a short survey about the podcast. Please take a few minutes to complete the survey, provide us with some feedback. Your responses will be very helpful as we plan the next set of podcast episodes. This episode is the second part of a two-episode series presenting audio recorded during a March 2008 Center for Teaching workshop titled Podcasting: What Is It and Why Would You Want to Do It? The previous episode featured a discussion of the roles podcasting can play in and out of the classroom in the service of student learning. If you're curious about educational uses of podcasts in college and university teaching, you might want to start with that episode. If you're already interested in podcasting, you'll enjoy this episode, which features a discussion from the March workshop of some of the more technical and logistical aspects of producing and using podcasts. The workshop featured remarks by Michael Risen, Graduate Teaching Fellow at the Center for Teaching, Jeff Johnston, an assistant director at the Center for Teaching and lecturer in the Department of Earth and Environmental Sciences, Melanie Moran, assistant director for Web Communications in the Public Affairs Office, and Brian Smokler, manager of instructional systems for the Technology Support System at Peabody College of Education and Human Development, and video technical manager for the Public Affairs Office. Michael and Jeff took the lead on the teaching-related aspects of podcasting, so they're featured in our previous episode. Melanie and Brian took the lead on the technical aspects of podcasting, and you'll hear from them in this episode, beginning with Melanie.
I'm not going to go through all the details on how to upload files to here. It's all written. It's not difficult. You get into it using Blackboard, and all the steps are here. Just following those steps will take you through it. And my contact information is on the iTunes U website, as is Brian's, as are the other people that will help you do that. If you want someone to walk you through it, we'll do that, no problem. So I think that would probably be a better use of our time than me going through that.
Melanie, it might be worth saying that since it is through Blackboard, you do need a Blackboard course to act as a context for your podcast. So right. If you already have a course that you're teaching, then you're set. If you don't have a course that you're related to, you'll have to have one created for you, which is what we did with our Center for Teaching podcast. And
that's then you can just run through. That's the first thing, is if you don't have your course yet, then contact whoever is your support provider for OAK, and that information is on the OAK website. And everyone at Vanderbilt has access to OAK, but if you don't have a course set up, you can have one set up for you. It doesn't have to be a course with students in it. So when I'm saying course in this case, I'm just talking about this space in Blackboard and in iTunes U. All right. So we keep talking about how easy it is to make a podcast. It really is. I know it still seems a little bit mysterious, but this program here is just one free software program that's available to process audio. It's called Audacity, and you can download it for free or some both Mac and PCs. Brian has a list of some other free pieces of software that you can try out.
I like free.
Free's good. And it works.
Place to start.
If like Brian was saying, to get to that 80% level, a program like this definitely will get you there. And I don't know if this computer is set up to capture. Here we are at the Center for Teaching Podcasting Workshop. Okay. That's an audio file right there. That was my voice just speaking. It was just the computer microphone picking it up. And from there, I can do really simple edits. I can delete just by highlighting that quiet space at the beginning and the end just by hitting delete. I can then export this as an MP3 file, and then I'm just one step away from uploading it into iTunes and having the world see it. It really is that simple to get started. Very, very basic. And the steps for how to do that are on this yellow sheet here, creating a podcast episode using Audacity. So you really can start experimenting with this stuff very, very quickly without a lot of downtime. Okay. Brian?
Can I ask about adding video to it?
No.
No?
We are going to just talk about audio today.
Okay.
I'm hoping later this semester, which isn't much time left, to host a session on campus to teach people how to do basic video capture and editing.
You know, like with the computer and the camera that's here, when you just...
Are you a Mac or a PC?
PC.
There's a great program, well, it's not video, but if you do want to do something that's visual and incorporating audio, there's a great program called Camtasia that lets you capture what's going on your screen, so you can incorporate maybe a PowerPoint presentation and talk over it. That's a basic thing to try.
Yeah, it gets a lot more complicated when we start throwing visuals into the mix. When people talk about video, the questions then become, do we want a talking head? Mm-hmm. Just somebody there, and why do we want to see them as opposed to just audio? You know, because if you throw video into the mix, it really limits how people can then access the stuff. If you want to put lecture notes, if you want to do your PowerPoint presentations, or it's like, I don't know what, you're in earth sciences?
Yes.
You know, so if you have remote sensing stuff that you want to show people or something like that, and you want to pull telemetry data off of something so they can look at it in real time, that's sort of a different question.
No, I was thinking the talking head kind of thing, like we'll click the button, talk a little bit.
Well, you could get a little camera that sits on top of your computer.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So can you do just the one-click thing and have a...
It is, you know, what you'll get from me is why do we need to see the visuals on it? How is that different than just doing audio? Because it really limits how people can get access to it.
Yeah.
You know, the difference between... listening to an audio file on an iPod or listening to it on their computer, as opposed to being tied to something where they have to be watching it.
Okay.
It really limits that. Mm-hmm. And if there's a legitimate reason, or it really adds to the content, then yes. But people are asking about it. My question is why?
Because
The competition on the video side is pretty fierce. Mm-hmm. If you look at the content that we're throwing up there, we're really engaging in highly produced material. And we're fighting for audience with that. We can show up for our home page.
But we won 5 Emmys this year with our online video, which was a first. They never gave out Emmys for online stuff before. They started this year. So it's exploding. And what it does is lets people be their own newscasters. But that's another story.
Right.
So go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, again, if the content drives it, and that's the approach that I work from. And Audacity's free. On my blog, I've listed a few other things. I've tried to kind of distill down what the kind of basic tools that you need to get into this game are. And as I said earlier, I love cheap and free because not everybody has huge budgets. And not everybody is sure that they want to get into this stuff. And we want the financial barrier to entry to be fairly low, so you don't have to take a huge hit just to experiment with stuff. And that's that. I'm holding two little digital recorders, very similar to the one that we're recording this stuff on. These are the model below it. At B&H Photo, they're quoting me these things for $115 now, and they'll record a few hours of what I consider fairly high quality audio. And they're fairly simple to use. One big record button on the side and you're in business. They record in an audio format called WMA. And I'm going to get into a little bit of jargon here. This is kind of the hardest part of what you deal with when you get into this stuff is there are all these formats out there. And I found a neat little program called Switch, which is also free, that is sort of a universal file format converter. And it will take most of the standard audio formats that are recorded out here. These things record WMAs, which are Windows Media Audio files. And it can convert them to MP3s, which are easily edited in Audacity. And Audacity can then output those things as MP3 files. That's sort of the generic universal standard for audio right now. Apple likes to see stuff as QuickTime, as .mov files typically, but they'll take MP3s also. And you can put MP3 files up onto your Blackboard space, onto Oak, so people can download them there. put them in your blog if you want to, tag them with RSS feed information so people can get them as you update the stuff. So a little bit more than $100. If you're the...
I know Brian just mentioned RSS feeds, and we talked about that a little bit earlier. What that is, it is just allows you to subscribe to a podcast. The nice thing about putting your content in iTunes U is it generates RSS
it does
feed
that for
you. So if you don't have a feed on your website, it will generate it for you. If you have a blog, you have an RSS feed most likely. But that's a good thing to know.
Yeah, RSS is short for Real Simple Syndication. And it's a simple syndication tagging form that was developed specifically to push stuff out to people, to let them know you put something out there.
And the second resource on the blue sheet is another one of those seven things you should know about. It talks about RSS, and so why is it?
Yeah, that's a lot of good information that you guys put together. Digital, basic little recorder here. Simple physics come into play when you're recording. The closer you can get your microphone to the sound source, the better off you are. I have a little, what's called a lavalier microphone, a tie clip, a lapel microphone. This thing is $23. It plugs into the top of this thing, and I'm using this specifically since a lot of people are going to be seeing these things. And if I didn't mention it, I bought these for Public Affairs for checkout. So if somebody wants to experiment with this stuff, they can check it out and take it and use it. But it plugs into the top of this. I happen to be wearing a sweater today, but so you put this in your pocket, hit record, and you can walk and talk in a lecture, and then post the stuff when the class is over, and it's that simple. You'll learn as you record in Vanderbilt environments how noisy most of our buildings are. I've become really finely attuned to classroom noise. Lots of air conditioning noise in here.
Can you use Audacity to remove some of that background noise?
Yeah, there are some tools in there. You can run some filtering and things on it. Unfortunately, it's a pretty broad spectrum noise, and it's all over the place. Old buildings are really resonant, I've learned. You can kind of duck out some of the mid-low frequencies, but you have to be careful not to kill too much of the stuff for human voices, because then you start losing intelligibility. I've also brought a couple of USB microphones. These plug directly into the USB port of your computer. Audacity will recognize them, and you can use these to record. So if you want to sit in your office and do that. They're a little bit higher quality than these things, and you can also set higher audio recording rates so you can do better sounding recordings, basically.
What kind of file size?
It depends on bit rate. And one of the things I need to put on here, I'm delinquent. Having gotten a new chancellor, and there'd be some shuffling around in administration here, I haven't had a chance to really spend time updating this stuff. It depends on the bit rate that you select. With these things, because it compresses them fairly highly, if I remember right, we're getting like about an hour's worth of recording with these guys at their highest recording rate. I'm thinking it was about 60 megabytes, which is not huge by any stretch. Too big to email, but not too big to stream. And if you wanted to, if you really wanted to sacrifice the audio quality to a degree, you could go into Audacity and compress it even more and reduce the file size. Same thing, you can strip off one of the channels that will record in stereo by default. Most of the stuff that you're doing spoken word can be in mono, so you can cut your data rate by half just by dropping off of the channel. But I just wanted to show a couple of USB microphones. These things are useful in that you can plug them straight into your computer and record straight into your laptop or into a computer sitting at your desk.
And we've got one that's not quite that big. For like $25 or something, that works beautifully.
Yeah.
Just now, I've also heard that headphone mics work pretty well.
They do if you have the inputs on your computer. That's been the big issue, is that a lot of computers are dropping microphone inputs. Apple doesn't have them anymore.
Okay. Yeah. But do they have headphone USB mics?
Actually, I'm sure they're out there. I haven't looked for them.
What I've heard with headphones is because with that kind of mic, if you move it away from your face while you're talking, the audio quality varies a little bit, whereas the headphone will just move with you while you move.
And what you're getting, again, basic physics come into play. The larger the diaphragm, the better the frequency response on the microphone is going to be. So I'm always going to drive people to try and record the highest quality, best sounding audio that they can. It just sounds more professional. I've also got a blue snowball mic here, which is rather unusual, and you can see it's physically large. This thing's $100, which I also thought was a pretty good deal. It sounds really good. And blue, for those of you that might be tangentially involved in the music business two blocks over from us, is a boutique microphone manufacturer. You'll find these things in all the top-end studios. Not this particular USB one, although they may have them there, but blue mics are very highly regarded in the recording industry. You know, that's basically it. The next thing I would offer...
like that in a room like this and capture what everybody's talking, or is that...
These things are better designed for fairly close proximity use. What you run into with this is because the frequency response is so good on these things, when you start kicking up the gain to get somebody talking all the way on the other side of the room, you pick up lots of room noise at other times. You know, I'm listening to it, I can hear all kinds of air handler noise in here at a fairly high frequency. If you want to hear what quiet is, I'll invite you over to the audio studio that we have in the Wyatt Center, and we'll seal you up in there and turn off the air conditioning, and you can see what a quiet environment is. As soon as we step back out or turn the air conditioning on, you can hear how noisy that stuff is. But for the high-end stuff that we do a lot of radio broadcasts also. We have an audio studio in the Wyatt Center in the basement in what was formerly a swimming pool. So we have big, thick concrete walls around us.
Yeah.
It was a swimming pool. There was a basketball gym where the computer lab is now. And somebody used to live upstairs in the building, I heard. All these great stories about me.
Speaking of studios, in the next couple weeks, probably ITS will let people know that they have created a podcasting studio in the Hill Center, and it's set up to do. They have a pretty nice setup there.
Audio, yeah, I helped them design a space. One of the first things that we addressed in there was air handler noise. The ITS building is so loud; it sounds like you're on a ship.
But that space, ITS will let people know about it once.
They come online.
But that's free, and it'll just be something you reserve. There won't be anybody holding your hand, though. That's the one thing I'm a little concerned about. But it will be available. There's going to be instructional material there to help you through it, and it's free. So it's a great resource that they're offering.
Yeah, and when we were originally discussing, because they came to me and asked what they could do with it, and I came in and listened to the space, which is usually the first thing I do. And I said, we've got to do some sort of sound abatement in here. Either that or shut the air conditioning off. Because it was unbelievably loud. I actually brought one of these recorders in and just recorded the room noise and then gave it to Matt Hall and said, this is what you're dealing with. So they got some sound mitigation stuff put into the walls and ceilings to deal with that stuff. That said, if you guys want to do something, give me a shout. And we can go up there together, because I'm on the Peabody side of campus, so it's just a quick walk down the hill, and we can go in there and work. That actually came because I threatened to build a podcasting studio, and ITS wanted to get, you know, in on that game. We still may put one together on the Peabody side over in the Wyatt Center, because we have some spaces that we could use there. In our computer labs, where we have all the audio and video editing stuff already, so it kind of made sense to have a recording booth.
Let me just ask, Gil's question brought up a good point about, let's say if you want to record a discussion in class, how well will something like that pick up this discussion that we're having?
Really well, actually.
We'll find out.
Yeah, I was going to say, we can play it back in just a sec. But these things have, I'll pass one around so you guys can see it. They have a little stereo mic that fits on the top. They have three sensitivity modes on them, and you can really crank the gain up on it, the gain being the recording level, pretty high. And they're designed for gathering sound in this sort of a situation. There are also microphones that are designed specifically for capturing sound in a situation like this. PZM, pressure zone microphones, are the specific type. And they run in the $150 range, and they'll plug into this also. And we've used them. So, she has an English accent, a proper London accent, I gather. But that's the basics of it. You know, file conversion using Switch, edit using Audacity. we have just one audio channel open on Audacity. It'll actually let you run multiple channels. So if you wanted to do some sort of a music intro to your piece or a standard opener or something like that, you can mix it in and then dissolve into or fade into, you know, your standard program stuff. And it lets you do fairly sophisticated cut and paste editing where you can cut out the garbage if you want to, pauses and mistakes and things like that.
And if you're on that relatively new Mac that come with GarageBand, and you can do all this with GarageBand, and
yep.
One nice thing is it has a lot of built-in free music intros that you can incorporate into your podcast.
And there's lots of stuff online also, ranging from free to highly produced, fairly expensive, what they call needle drop music. You can spend $50 or $75 and get something that's fairly unique and very professional sounding, or you can just get stuff. There are free sites that basically give away stuff because there are composers out there just trying to get their names out there to the world.
You've just heard audio recorded at our March 2008 workshop titled Podcasting, What Is It and Why Would You Want to Do It? I would like to thank the presenters, Michael Risen, Jeff Johnston, Melanie Moran, and Brian Smokler for their presentations at the workshop and for permitting us to include them in our podcast. If you have any comments or questions about this episode, please visit our blog located at blogs.vanderbilt.edu/CFTpodcast and let us know your thoughts. We're interested in hearing what you have to say about possible uses of podcasting in your teaching. You'll also find in our blog links to the PowerPoint presentation used in the workshop, as well as links to the handouts referenced during the discussion and a few other relevant resources. Vanderbilt instructors interested in discussing podcasting or any other aspect of their teaching are invited to call the Center for Teaching at 615-322-7290 to arrange a meeting with a CFT teaching consultant. We're glad to help you reflect on and explore the various choices you make as a teacher and to connect you with resources you'll find useful as you design, implement, and assess learning experiences for your students. I've been your host, Derek Bruff. Please don't forget to take a few minutes to provide us with some feedback on our podcast series. You'll find a short survey in our blog. Thanks for listening.